almost every week I help somebody put this on, then I go and put it on upside down, backwards, and maybe it's one of my dyslexic day or something. Well, good afternoon, everybody. I want to start right out in a scripture. I'd like you to turn over to Acts 20. While you're turning there, I hope you listened to Clay's portion of the prayer and heard what he had to say. I hope you were listening to all the prayers, but Acts 20 and verse 7. Paul's on his, I guess we could call it his farewell tour. And it says, on the first day of the week, when we met to break bread, Paul was holding a discussion with them. Since he intended to leave the next day, he continued speaking until midnight. There were many lamps in the room upstairs where they were meeting. A young man named Eutychus, who was sitting in the window, began to sink off into a deep sleep while Paul was talked even longer. Overcome by sleep, he fell to the ground three floors below and was picked up dead. But Paul went down and, bending over him, took him up in his arms and said, "Do not be alarmed, for his life is in him." Then Paul went upstairs, and after he had broken bread and eaten, he continued to converse with them until dawn. Then he left. Meanwhile, they had taken the boy away alive and were not a little comforted, but greatly comforted, basically. Last time I spoke, we talked about how we can interact better with God. There's two great commandments that he left us with, and today I want to dwell on the second one, how we can better interact with each other. That story that we just read, there's a lot of different dimensions, you know, to look at there, but I want to focus on Paul's actions for the moment. Not that he spoke until midnight. I don't plan on doing that. Not that someone fell asleep while he was speaking. But the fact that, again, he was on his farewell tour. He knew that this was going to be the last time that he saw these brethren. And that they, in turn, were looking forward to spending time with him. That they wanted to spend the entire day. Not just a couple hours of it. Not just a quick meal and we're gone. But they wanted to make the time last as long as possible. And that Paul was sharing with them encouragement the entire time. But then when Eutychus falls out of the window, you know, obviously that's going to be very upsetting. And look what Paul does. He runs downstairs, and the first thing he does is he bends over Eutychus and takes him up in his arms and holds him. And prays for his life to come back. How often do we look around us and consider those that are falling, have fallen, are about to fall, and we rush to them, wrap our arms around them, and pray life over them? Spiritual life, spiritual comfort. When we do that, while we do things like that, we're giving spiritual life and comfort to those that are around them. Just as Paul here, when he grabbed that young man, he was also comforting those in the congregation or that were there that evening. Let's turn to 2 Timothy 2, verse 15. Do your best to present yourself to God as one approved by him, a worker who has no need to be ashamed, rightly explaining the word of truth, avoiding profane chatter, for it will lead people into more and more impiety, and their talk will spread like gangrene. Among them there are Hymenaeus and Philetus, who have swerved from the truth by claiming that the resurrection has already taken place. They are upsetting the faith of some. That verse 15, do your best to present yourself to God as one approved, a worker, rightly explaining the word of truth. Are we doing our due diligence? Are we picking up his Bible and reading it and studying it? And along with that, are we going to him constantly, not just daily, but constantly, and asking, Father, what would you have me do next? These words that I just read, what am I supposed to take from them? This event that just took place, what am I supposed to do here? You know, the opportunity, and he warns us about this, for false teaching, especially within the body, within the church, is greater than ever. As each one of us, we don't rely upon just the minister, but each one of us, are we leading people towards God in his way or away from it? Are we rightly explaining the word of truth? And do our actions show it? Moving down to verse 19 in 2 Timothy 2. But God's firm foundation stands, bearing this inscription, the Lord knows those who are his, and let everyone who calls upon the name of the Lord turn away from wickedness. In a large house there are utensils, not only of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay, some for special use and some for ordinary. All who cleanse themselves of the things I have mentioned will become the special utensils, dedicated and useful to the owner of the house, ready for every good work. We need to encourage each other in our walk. We need to encourage others that they constantly seek God, not primarily through his word, but primarily through his voice and in combination with studying his word. Me personally, I'm concerned today for many, because I keep hearing of individuals seeking clarity in his word and then making a quick decision. But then when I ask them a question, they can't answer in a way that tells me that God was the one that drove them to the decision. That was their own decision. And many times when I hear about these situations, it's a decision that draws them out from the body, away from the body. They start doing things on their own. How can we understand God's word if we don't seek and hearken to his voice? As some take on new knowledge of the word without God's asking, they don't see themselves ostracizing themselves from the body. They forget that God's word also says to love him with all of your heart, soul, and mind, and love others as ourselves. How can we do either one of those things if we don't spend quality time with him and with others? Hebrews 10:24, he says, and let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works. Are we getting to know God and his word in a way that any conversation that comes along for each of us, we are leading others towards him rather than away? You know, most of us may not consider ourselves salesmen, but all of us in one way or another, we really are. Over the course of our week or something, we will have an opportunity where we sit down with somebody or we're standing with somebody talking about a subject that we're passionate about. And as we talk to them about our passion, our goal is to convince them that they need to adopt our passion also. And I can I give you a little bit of an example. Dennis Gonzalo really enjoys cameras. So I can go to Dennis and I can say, hey, I'm kind of thinking about buying a camera. Would you give me some hints as to maybe the best model, the best features, maybe the best manufacturer? And I can guarantee immediately Dennis will go, oh, yeah, I'd love to help you with that. You know, did you know this? Did you know this? What about this? What about this? And when we're done talking, I'm going to be more excited about buying that camera than I was before I talked to Dennis. When we have a discussion with anybody about anything, does it come across that way that when we're done with that discussion, that they are a little bit closer to God, or their enthusiasm towards God is a little bit higher? In everything. Ephesians 4, verse 29. Let no evil talk come out of your mouths, but only what is useful for building up as there is a need, so that your words may give grace to those who hear. 1 Thessalonians 5, and verse 14. And we urge you, beloved, to admonish the idlers, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with all of those. You know, as we go about this walk, there is always people around us that are idle. And you've heard me talk about the fact that I was in a very good atmosphere for 45 years of my life, but I was idle. And it took one or two people to gently nudge me out of that idleness. There are some that are going to be faint-hearted. They're just overwhelmed with life as it's hitting them right now. And there's some that are weak. Colossians 3:16. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. Teach and admonish one another in all wisdom, and with gratitude in your hearts, sing psalms, hymns, spiritual songs to God. There's Linda right there. Proverbs 27:17. Iron sharpens iron, and one person sharpens the wits of another. But only if we're talking about something that's worthwhile. Hebrews 3:13. But exhort one another every day. Not just when you gather together. Go out of your way every day to exhort, as long as it's called today, so that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. Proverbs 25 and verse 11. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in a settling of silver. I felt like I just... 2 Timothy 3 verse 16. All scripture is inspired by God and is useful for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and for training in righteousness. 17, so that everyone who belongs to God may be proficient, equipped for every good work. Verse 17, so that everyone, again, it's all on our shoulders, every one of us. We don't leave it for somebody else. Not that we can't look at somebody else and say, you know what, they're more proficient in this area. You know, can we talk to them also? Chapter 1 and verse 17. Learn to do good, seek justice, rescue the oppressed, defend the orphan, and plead for the widow. You know, in Timothy, we read where we're in a race. And that each of us are contending in that race. Do you actually feel like you're in the race? Or at times, do you sit back and say, oh no, wait, I'm the wrong person. I'm still in training. We need to be aware the starter's guns already went off. The race is already in action. And people are passing us. And people are falling behind us. We can't allow ourselves to get tired. If feel like, nope, that's enough. I'm done. I need to rest just for a moment. 2 Timothy 4:7 says, I fought the good fight, I finished the race, I kept the faith. Are we going to finish this race knowing that we exerted everything? You know, sadly, here in society, when we talk about a race or a competition, it's so that I can be the one and only winner. This race isn't that way. This race, the goal is that everyone crosses the finish line. No one's left behind. So what are we doing to make sure others around us are staying on pace? Ephesians 4 and verse 9. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. What did I say? I said Ecclesiastes 4 and 9, sorry. In verse 10, for if they fall, one will lift the other up. But woe to the one who is alone and falls and does not have another to help. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though one might prevail against another, two will withstand one. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. You know, I read these verses and I think of Tina right now. She's lost her husband. And as Dennis said, going to that funeral last week, or Rick, I think, said, seeing how many people were there and hearing some of the stories, it's easy to see that Ed was a mighty force in that family, that Tina and the girls looked up to him, you know, and needed not just his companionship. They needed a whole lot more. Colossians 2, verse 2, I want their hearts to be encouraged and united in love, so that they may all have the riches of assured understanding and have the knowledge of God's mystery, that is, Christ himself. I want to turn this now interactive. I want to get as much feedback from you as we can. Most of you have heard my story that, you know, now it's been 6 years ago, that I got to my lowest level and I had to turn to somebody, and it was at the Feast of Tabernacles. And God obviously was involved because that person addressed me in a way they'd never addressed me before, and in a way I wasn't expecting, and they gently nudged me to the realization I haven't been in the race. I've been sitting on the sidelines. So is there anybody here that has experienced the same thing? A time in your life when someone gave you words of encouragement and gave you the ability to take the next step forward. Hold on a second. Let me get a... Can you run the mic around? You'll have to push the button and or bottom and hold it till it. Oh, Dennis has it.
I don't know if this was a low time in my life, but when I was a teenager, I had a minister, a Protestant minister, who helped me understand something I didn't believe, that no matter how hard I tried, no matter how good I was, no matter how much obedience I kept, I could never do it well enough to be in God's presence without Christ. And the only way we can be there is, like the song said, to be white as snow is only through Christ's blood. And that was a changing point in my life. I didn't hit the bottom, but he helped me to understand the little things we do that, I don't know if it's our human nature or how it came from Adam in us, but we just can't get it right on our own. And we got to come to understand that, or we're not going to be there. One other thing I wanted to say, this is in James 2:8. It says, if, however, you fulfill the royal law according to Scripture, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Christ talks about this as a supreme law in so many ways. The law of Christ is love your neighbor as yourself. And of course you do that by any time you see the right thing to do, you do it. But so often we'll say, I'm not going to pick up that trash, even though it's the right thing to do. I'm not going to bring myself down to some bum on the street, even though it might be the right thing to do. It's easy to do the right thing when it's nice and clean and pretty, but it's hard to do the right thing when it's difficult and bloody and hurtful and painful. And we have to get in that mind of Christ that will serve everyone no matter where they are.
Yeah, you know, as we're, you know, approaching this season, this fall holiday season, you know, we're looking forward to Christ returning and establishing his kingdom. And what does he promise as our roles in that kingdom? Anybody? Kings and priests. How in the world can we then be perfect kings and priests if we're not training right now? Which again, you know, the biggest thing I want to really focus on today is, are we studying his word and truly understanding it? And you can't truly understand it until you're asking him, Father, what do I take from this? And how do I incorporate it into my life? Is there any other stories where people have been nudged in a positive direction? Lori?
I'm going to say I was when, after watching you starting to pray, that encouraged me to start praying and start reading.
Any others? David?
For me, I can't pinpoint like a moment or whatnot, other than I would definitely say getting, like, life events, getting married, having children. I mean, those are wake-up calls, especially as a man, you know, how I want to lead my family and what things I need to be doing. Those were wake-up calls for me, in a sense. That's kind of what I think of, I guess, when you ask that question.
Dennis?
I can't remember a specific thing for me. I'm sure some people have kicked my rear end sometime during the walk. But I know that there was a big wake-up call to people that Paul, at least some people think it was Paul, but in the book of Hebrews, I quoted several times. But I don't know if we need anybody else to tell us, but if I'll just read this verse. In Hebrews chapter 5, it's talking about Melchizedek. And it says in verse 11, of whom we have much to say and hard to explain, since you have become dull of hearing. He's talking about church people. And said, for though by this time, meaning they've been there long enough, you ought to be teachers, you who've been here a while, you still need someone to teach you again the first principles of the oracles of God, and have come to need milk and not solid food. For everyone who partakes only of milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, the Bible. For he is a babe, but solid food belongs to those who are full of age, that is, those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. So to me, every time I read that, I ask myself, how long have I been in the church? How long have I, quote, known the truth? And can I teach it? Or am I still needing to be taught? Not that we will ever get to the point where we can't learn, but can we teach the fundamentals of Christ? And then it goes on to explain what that means in Hebrews 6. But to me, that's a big wake-up call, because I ask myself every day, am I needing milk or am I needing meat? And that's a question that we can ask every morning, probably.
Yeah, Linda?
Yeah, I think I have two of them. Is let's see, when I was in my 40s, I think, we lived in Nebraska. I ended up with a ruptured appendix and didn't know it. And I was working at Walmart. They were doing a new store and getting ready to open. And I I was a cashier, and I had a customer in line. And all of a sudden, I got an awful pain in my side. And I had just eaten lunch at a Chinese restaurant, so I thought maybe I had gotten food poisoning or something. And so it went away, and then about probably 5 more minutes, another customer came through my line and got another sharp pain, worse than the first one. And the guy says, "Are you okay?" And I said, "No, I'm not feeling good." And he says, "Well, you're turning green and all different colors." So they called Steve, and he came and got me, and the next day I was fine. And then I think it was that next day I just started going downhill. Well, anyway, to make the story short, ended up in the hospital with emergency surgery. I had infection. And the doctor told my sister and Steve that if I would waited 2 more days, I would have died. And so after I got out of the hospital, I just started thinking, and it's like, wow, you know, that was a close call, and I thank God for keeping me alive. And then I think another one was when my mom passed away, and that really kind of opened my eyes to where I need to get closer to God and start worshiping Him more and reading His Word. And so it does. Things like that open your eyes up. And so that's kind of what happened.
Well, I know for me, it's been quite a few years now, but what I really enjoy that we do here, and it's not we're the only ones, but the fact that we added testimonials to our service. You know, that gives me encouragement, and I know it gives others encouragement. And just like, you know, hearing some of these stories, it gives each of us encouragement. And again, that's, you know, I want to talk today, or I want to spend some time talking about how we can encourage others in everyday life. And last Sunday, Lori and I went to the funeral of Ed Gray. And afterwards, we were at a meal, and we ate with Dennis and Michelle. And as we were getting up and leaving, an older couple had just sat down, and we were about to walk by, and we noticed they'd bowed their heads, grabbed each other's hands, and they were praying over their meal in this very busy restaurant. And I kind of held back until they were finished, and I went up to the gentleman. I said, "I just want to thank you for being a good example, to make it easier for me when I'm out with my family to do the exact same thing every time." And he was really caught off guard, but he agreed that that's what we should be doing. And it's little tiny things like that. You don't know who's watching you, why they're watching you, and what their take is going to be. But our example should be one towards God, so that no matter whether or not we even said anything, as Clay mentioned in his prayer, that their takeaway is there's something different about them, and I like it. So I've got a list here of things that we can do, areas where we can encourage each other. And we can spend a few minutes on each one of them and see what examples you might have. I've got a few examples. And if there's something you think we should add to the list, let's do that. Maybe I should have brought a whiteboard up or not. But let's start down the list. Areas in our life where we can encourage somebody. What about times of sickness? What's some of the ways that we can encourage someone in a time of sickness? I wrote down, you know, obviously we can We can send a card. We can take over a meal. I know, I think Heather's kind of in charge of that for our group, right? If something, you know, if a family goes down for whatever reason, that Heather will help us coordinate that that family will have meals for the next few days if need be. Maybe somebody's going through cancer where they need to get to appointments on a very regular basis, and we just offer to shuttle them back and forth. Is there anything else? Yeah, Paige?
A little while ago, probably a year and a half ago, I went to this conference, this mother's conference, and it was great. And I met a friend that I still have and keep in touch with, and we roomed together. And she's from down in Cincinnati, and she had it deals with chronic illness where, like, sometimes she can go to church, sometimes she can't. She's homebound when she's having flare-ups and things like that. And this has been an ongoing issue for her. And so in and out of hospitals and stuff, too. And she said something that just always stuck with me. Kind of struck me at the time and has always stuck with me, which is that when you say that you're going, this was her opinion, that when you say you're going to pray for someone in need or that is ill or that sort of thing, that that you are like in a covenant with them, that that is very serious, and that you are telling them that you will be petitioning the very throne of God on their behalf. And she said, it doesn't mean much to me when someone tells me that they are going to pray for me. But if they stop right then with me and pray with me, that is a whole nother thing. And she said, and if they do say that they're going to pray for me, if they come back and say, I've been praying for you. How are you doing? Is there anything specific I can pray for you now? Do you need a change in prayer? Do you need more fervent prayer? Is there a testimony of that you've been getting better? To come back to the person, and they know then that you really have been thinking of them. You really have been praying for them. And she said that was that is what's most encouraging, especially when you're dealing with like more of a long-term chronic issue. So that's always stuck with me, and it's kind of that that perspective has changed the way that I interact with people that do have chronic illness.
Any others on sickness? What about home discipleship? That was already brought up by the Lloyds. Do we encourage that? I can tell you here, a couple of years ago, I was pretty discouraged from the standpoint as I was looking around on the web within congregations I was familiar with. I was looking to see who's teaching this. How can I get more? Because I was looking for myself. And there was so little out there within the arenas that I was familiar with. I had to go to other arenas. And that was kind of sad for me. You know, it's like, why aren't we doing better in this? And we are starting to. I know Dave and I have talked about this quite a bit, and we're passionate about it. But, you know, my boys are to the age now, they're going to be gone within a couple of years. I don't want to waste that time in one sense. And so how can I do better at that? Which means I need examples. Who's got examples? And very seldom do I hear the examples. One thing that we started doing is at dinner time, no matter who's there, we read at least a chapter and then discuss it at our table. Gary?
One just quick thing.
Our life is really our time. And believe it or not, there's 186,000 seconds in a day. And what we find out is we're an awful lot like the government. We waste a lot of those seconds on foolish riffraff, and sometimes even evil thoughts. And we need to consider our time and how are we using our time, which is our life, to serve others, to help others, to do what we can. I mean, small groups now, we've known for a long time, this is the very best way to disciple people is through small groups. Call them Bible studies or prayer groups or those kind of things. But you discuss in a small group, you can discuss intimate subjects that you might not be out in the open with or a stranger with. But in a small group, when you get to know someone, you're more apt to expose your weaknesses and your difficulties. And I think they're very important. We should encourage small groups or getting together for dinner or to getting together for just a little music and maybe some Bible discussion more often on a regular basis.
Yeah, when I was... Huh?
We're talking about home discipleship.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, all right.
When I was... when my twin sister and I were younger, my mom and dad, after we ate supper, we'd have kind of a worship time. And right at first, my sister and I weren't into it. But as my mom and dad did it, they read Bible stories, we sang, and then we had a prayer together. And that just was really neat. And it really helped my sister and I.
Dennis?
You know, all groups have their imperfections. All families do. We have no difference. But in terms of discipleship, I'm quite encouraged by it. The fact that we've got some families here, in fact, all of them. I know, of course, Benaiah is the product of Heather Miles, and then you've got Gabriel with Garrett. And I'm really pleased to see how they're raising their children. They're excited that I see that. That's they're discipling their children properly from my viewpoint. But not only them, but you've got the Lloyds and the Beltzes. I mean, I usually joke about this, but it's probably true for the most part where sometimes you see families with kids and you wish you didn't have any. You don't want to, or families with kids and you go, I really want to have some because of their example. And I think when I see the examples of the families here in this congregation, I want to have more kids. You know, it's just that there's hope. What? No, I don't. Well, you know, not right now. Yeah, it's a figure of speech, okay? But if you, well, never mind. Okay. So I think in terms of encouragement, just by the fact you take care of your business home, raise them right, teach them God's way, that geometrically multiplies through schools, through the people they meet, the friends they make. And really, you don't have to preach the gospel that way. Your kids will do that for you. They're like testimony of your belief in Christ. So I think that's the way I look at home discipleship. You take care of your own, and the rest will follow. Because it doesn't make sense to teach others when your own family's kind of falling apart, right? I mean, some people have struggles. I know that. But, you know, for the most part, we raise our kids properly, and it's almost like Amway. You know, you teach somebody, and they teach somebody else, but there's no money involved. So,
well, Dennis, I do look up to you as a home discipler, if that's the right term. But now that you bring up that you would like more kids, I'll share another example of home discipleship with you that we don't tend to think about. And a couple of years ago, really threw me for a loop because of just the mental shift. Some of us know the laws out west, the law family out west. They had become empty nesters. Their children were not only out of the house but out of college, and they decided to go to the Ukraine and bring back two teenagers so that they could give those kids opportunity. Not physical opportunity, spiritual opportunity. And from there now, we know of what, four other families that have done the exact same thing, are bringing back kids from the Ukraine and adopting. And I know Becca Marsh just posted that she's bringing home their daughter, their new daughter. They're in the air now, I think, aren't they? Or they landed, yeah. So that was one that I'd never considered, you know, adoption as a way to home disciple. Chip. All right, who has a mic?
This is Deuteronomy 6, and it's full of teaching lessons to teach your children and your family. But in 6, it emphasizes the idea that you got to spend time with them. It says, you shall teach them diligently to your sons and shall talk of them when you sit in your house or when you walk by the way or when you lie down at night. So your time with your children, as Dennis pointed out, so many times nowadays Satan works into our world and he wants us to dump our children off on the schools and even churches and Boy Scouts and different organizations and not spend our own time with them, teaching them the direction of God. But it's clear if you read most of these first chapters of Deuteronomy, over and over he says, teach your children, teach the people around you, teach those close to you whenever you can. But you do it by walking with them and being with them and doing projects together and doing things together. And you can apply godly principles in almost everything you do.
Just with the home discipleship as well, it's an encouraging trend, exciting trend, and you hinted at this, that churches are now teaching and equipping parents and grandparents to disciple, have home discipleship to their children. And a generation ago, that wasn't really true at all. It was more the church was like, give your children to us. And we have Sabbath school, we'll have youth ministries, and they segregated children and took them away. And so now there's just a whole reverse in that, a different trend with family integrated churches and teaching and equipping parents. So that's a very positive, cool thing, I think.
Well, and you've heard me say this, but I want to keep repeating it because I don't think we teach this enough or think about it enough or do it enough. If you as a father of a leader as your family, the spiritual leader of your family, if you truly want to follow the instructions in Deuteronomy 6 that Gary just read, you can go to the father and say, Father, I want to spend more time with my family. Right now I'm spending 50, 60, 70 hours a week at work because my boss requires it. I don't know what to do. Help me out. What do I do here? How do you think God's going to respond to that? If you're willing to take the time and you're willing to ask the question, he's going to respond favorably. He's going to give you the opportunity to spend more time with your family. And you're not going to suffer because of it. You'll be richly blessed.
Let our boss tell us that so we can make more money and have a better car or a bigger house. Instead of thinking, maybe I don't need a better car or a bigger house.
Paige, you had something?
Before, when you were saying about like ways that we've been like turned around in our lives, I would say that one for us would be in the previous congregation that we were in before we moved here. There was a woman who was a single mom. Not by choice. Her husband had left. She had five children that she had raised and still had a couple in the home. And she had, through the grace of God, not gone back to work full time in all that time, had received a lot of help from others and family members and such, and had also homeschooled them. There was no father in the home to disciple her children, and she did it. She did it. She went to homeschool conferences. She prayed with her children. She was very diligent in teaching them, instructing them, getting male role models around her at church to also pour into her sons, especially, and places for like families for her daughters to go and spend time with, to see a healthy family in action. Her daughters came to our house a lot, for example, and she was really instrumental, I think, and we had very young children at that time, and giving us resources. And here was this woman, no husband to help her. She's the head of her household, and she set such a good example with all of that, and really was a help to direct it wasn't a turnaround, but really directing and focusing what our job was as parents and what David's job was as the father. Because a lot of the scriptures that talk about teaching your children, it's not mothers teach your children, mothers, you know, do this, mothers do that. And in the homeschooling community, when you go to homeschool conferences, you're surrounded by like hundreds, if not thousands, of women. These are not the men going to these conferences a lot of times. It's not the men staying home and teaching the children. It's not the men. The men a lot of times don't even know what's going on with the homeschooling. They leave it completely up to the mother. And we're supposed to, as parents, supposed to do this. And the ultimate authority in that would be the father. And so just because you're homeschooling doesn't necessarily mean that you're, you know, you have an involved father that's really doing all of those things. Some people assume that, but that's not necessarily the case. And so I would say that woman was very instrumental, and I think that goes to show that anybody can be a positive influence on parents doing their job in the home. You don't have to be, you know, a father or a man who's standing up there, you know, preaching on it. Just being a good example and being there, giving resources and praying for other families. There was a man in our last congregation that had no children, and he would go. He was an older man, and he would go to the homeschooling conferences just to learn and how he could help the younger parents that had young children. He would pray for us. You would get resources just land on your door in the mail. No, just your name. We didn't even know, but we always knew where it came from because he would spend his money getting resources for all the parents with children. So that was really, really encouraging.
All right, let's move on, if we can, to the next one, marriage. How do we encourage each other in marriage? I'll share a couple things with you. The ladies have spent a lot of time on this area, encouraging others. And at one of their, and this is kind of sad, this was about 3-4 years ago, they did something here more locally, and literally, I think 3 or 4 people showed up. But Lori and I were those 3 or 4 people. And in one of the exercises, they asked us to come up with 1 or 3 things that we could start doing together as a couple in agreement. Not one saying, well, we need to start doing it, and the other go, oh, fine, we'll do it. In agreement, what can we do? And we're working on setting SMART goals. If you know what those, I don't remember. Must be simple, achievable.
Measurable.
Yeah, measurable. We're working on that. And so Lori and I kind of break off, and we're going to work on our little short list. And Lori says, I think we should start praying together. And that's been something that I was hearing constantly from people, especially from the homeschoolers groups. And I told you, I've been out in other arenas looking for home discipleship, and it seemed like everything I read, you need to pray with your wife or your mate. And for some reason, I was dragging my feet, and here all of a sudden, God taps her on the shoulder and says, he's not listening to me. Maybe he'll listen to you. And so we started praying together. We all should be doing that. Another thing is here within the past year, several couples from this congregation took opportunity to go to a weekend seminar for couples, for married couples. And then they turned around and they purchased tickets so that others could go. We encouraged them that way. Any other ways you can think of, know about? All right, we'll keep moving. Because I got, I think there's 216 left on my list now. All right.
For some reason, we have in our nature a negative attitude about life. It's hard to keep us on the positive side of life, and it's discouraging to me when I suggest something and my wife says no without even talking about it. It's like rejection. And the same to her when she suggests something and I reject it. My point is this: when something doesn't agree with us, we don't have to reject it right away. We can say, here's my thoughts on it, or is there another way to look at it, or here's my opinion about that subject. Not that you're bad or that I'm saying no to you. I'm saying, let's discuss it in more depth from another perspective. That's just what I'm saying. It reminds me of a joke, but I don't want to waste time.
All right. How about the area of tithing? This is controversial, isn't it? We're approaching the feast, and Now I'm mixing up. Is it Deuteronomy 16? No, I'm wrong. He tells us to set aside a portion so that we can go to his feasts. That sounds like a command to me. So do we do that? Do we encourage others to do that? One of the ways you can do that is to help them enjoy the feast in a way that they realize they don't want to miss out next year. So that they will start putting forth the effort. And in our way, as soon as we're back this fall, or here in our few weeks, we're going to be back from the feast. You start encouraging them to start setting aside their portion. A while back, I called up a friend of mine and I said, "Hey, can we go out to dinner together?" He says, "Yeah." He knew I had something on my, I had an agenda, but he didn't ask. We got there and we sat down and we chit-chatted for a few minutes, and finally I just blurted out, "Are you tithing?" And you should have seen his whole body just went, he says, "You know, my wife has been bugging me for months now to start tithing." He says, "And I can't do it." I said, "Why can't you do it?" He says, "We don't make enough money." He says, "Even when I think we have enough, then something comes along and it's gone and I can't tithe." And I said, "I know. So here's what you need to know. Is God blessed you with the original 100%. If it's $100, God blessed you with the original $100, right?" "Yep." "Do you understand that no matter what you do, you can never make that $100 more valuable? That somehow, some way, that $100 is some of it's going to fleet away from you. You're going to lose some of it. It's going to be wasted. However, if you give God the first 10% or more," 10% is just a starting point. "You give God the first 10%, the first fruits of that $100, he guarantees that he will take the remaining 90% or whatever's remaining, he'll bless it so that it does more than what the original $100 would have done. Every single time." At the end of our dinner, I said, "So, you can't make this decision on your own. You're going to go back and talk to your wife, right?" He says, "Yeah, but we're going to do this." I said, "Well, that's fine, as long as you're in agreement." Next week, she comes up to me, and she thanks me. And she says, "You know what? We had to put this much money into tithes. 3 days later, we got a check in the mail for the exact same amount." How often do we take the time to sit down and have dinner with somebody and said, "Dude, this isn't going to be an easy conversation, but I just want to twist your arm for just a couple seconds." But then do we have the stories to back it up? Have we been doing it so that we can share with them, "Here's the blessings we've already experienced. I want you to see the same exact blessings and even more. Because we're in a race together. I'm helping you up so we can cross the finish line together." Yeah, go ahead, Gary.
You have to look at giving, in my opinion, in another way. It's not just giving 10% to the church necessarily. It's serving others with your money also, if you help someone in your neighborhood. And it's not just money. It's your time and your brain and your thoughts to be concerned for others. So there's a whole lot more to it than just giving 10% to a church. And if your attitude isn't right with that, it's no good anyway.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, Gary, because I did use the term tithing, but if you notice, I actually, in the middle, I changed to first fruits. It's first fruits. We need to understand first fruits, because it's not just about our money. It's about everything. It is our time. It is Everything that God has blessed us with, do we give him back the first fruits? Because if we don't, he has not blessed any of it. And we're going to lose some of it. We're going to waste some of it. Some of it's just going to disappear. Go ahead, Dennis.
First of all, I agree it's a controversial issue, which probably cannot be resolved today and probably won't without God's help. Having said that, though, I know that when my wife and I, how long, what, 40, 30-something years? 30, we've gone to the feast and haven't missed one. I went through periods of unemployment, but we still kept the feast. It was kind of hard to justify to my parents. I said, you owe some money, but you're going to the feast. But God has not, God has been faithful to us. So I think everybody has to come to that conclusion themselves, because it's, I think, partly a theological issue. Having said that, though, I like the fact that you can give examples of how it's benefited you, because I know my kids look forward to it. And first, it was more like just one big party, just having fun, seeing their friends. But then I think now they're beginning to see there's a deeper meaning to it as well. So, yeah, it's controversial, but believing in Jesus is controversial. So, I mean, we deal with it when it comes. So we can't force, but we can show examples and how it's benefited our lives.
Clay wore his boots. He should have wore his running shoes.
Yeah. Along that same line, we have kept the feast for like 45 years now, too. And there were one or two years where we didn't get to go somewhere for the feast. But we did keep the holy days, though they were a few hours away. But we couldn't go for the whole week. But one of those times, we were doing house cleaning, and we made more. That was when we first started doing it. And that week was the week we made the most money that since we started it, house cleaning. So God blessed us even during the feast, because he knew what our attitude was, that we wanted to do it, and we did the best we could with what we didn't even have.
Yeah, Dennis?
I just want to add another example, not from us, a minister we had many years ago. It's really not about money, because sometimes some of us are unemployed, have struggles. It's going to the feast, because this minister, Michelle remembers quite well what it is. He said, if we didn't grow it, we didn't eat it, meaning they had nothing. So when they went there, they brought their produce, whatever they, and they still celebrated it. Money was kind of incidental, but I like that phrase, if I didn't grow it, I didn't get to eat it. So,
well, Eileen kind of transitioned us a little bit from tithing into, and I'm going to lump two together here, keeping the feast, all of them, and the Sabbath, keeping his appointed times. How do we encourage others? I'll give you an example. This summer, Jonathan, Stacy invited any of us that wanted to come on Friday, a lot of Friday nights, over to their house Friday evening to kick off the Sabbath and fellowship. They're encouraging people to keep the Sabbath. The feasts. I'm not knocking you. You said you missed two feasts. I'm not beating you up. But we need to understand, Scripture says three times a year shall you appear, and it says males, but we know males are supposed to be the spiritual leaders of our families, which means families are going along. Christ's mother and father went and left him at the feast, so we know the whole family went. Three times a year shall you appear before me in the place that I choose. And when he says that, he's talking about Passover unleavened bread, he's talking about Pentecost, and he's talking about Feast of Tabernacles. We don't get to sit at home, period. Don't let anybody tell you that. It's not an excuse. There is no excuse. Three times a year, you shall appear before me in the place that I choose. There's no exceptions. So how do we encourage people to go to the feast? This congregation, for as small as we are, we have hosted a feast or multiple feast sites for what, 16, 17 years now? There's lots of opportunity for you to serve at the feast and make it more comfortable for whoever's there. I've shared this with you. This kind of goes into my next topic a little bit, which is prayer. But right now, I'm praying that God blesses each and every one of us with the most spiritually gifted feasts we've ever been to. And along with that prayer, I'm asking him to open my eyes and my ears to anyone that I might come across at the feast who needs encouragement. We're going back now to when we ask a prayer like that, what's his response going to be? It's going to be favorable every single time, right? He's going to say, okay, you're willing to do that? I'm going to point you out to somebody. And I've got story after story. Just in the last 4 or 5 feasts, I've got multiple stories of every single year. Any ways we can encourage Dennis?
I just want to add to what you just said. We've sponsored feasts as a congregation, and I think everybody here who's been here attests to this. If someone really wants to go, don't have it, if they save whatever they can and they get there, they will not starve because we pay for, at no cost, 13, 14, 15 meals. And God has blessed us. I was kind of skeptical about that, but I was proved incorrect again, proved right that God will take care of it. Those of you know we do that. So if you can get there and want to and do your best and really want to be there, we'll find a way our best we can to take care of the needs of people, up to a point, of course. But so I think that's one way we encourage them. We don't want to bribe people to come to the feast because that's not the purpose. The purpose is someone who wants to, believes in it, can't afford it, maybe we can make a way, maybe. But we try our best. So I think that's one way we as a congregation do it. And on a personal basis, I know that some people here have helped others by contributing some, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. We've been helped through the years. We were able to go to Hawaii for a while, you know, when we were starting off. So I appreciate that part. So.
Well, and, you know, we should keep this in mind, not just during the feast, but God tells us to take care of the widow, the poor, the orphan. So this year, going to the feast, Linda's got an unbelieving mate. See, setting aside tithes so that she can go to the feast? Maybe not. Is he happy that she might be setting aside tithes so that she can go to the feast? Maybe not. So we look out for somebody like Linda. We make sure that she can have a comfortable feast. There are single people there. There's young adults there who maybe they're in college, maybe they're out of college, maybe they're in their first job, maybe they've got 2 or 3 part-time jobs, and they can barely afford to get there. Their vehicle isn't all that good, you know, or once they get there, they're not going to have enough money for food. Take them out to eat. Help them with their hotel room. You can walk down to the front desk and say, so-and-so is staying here, right? Yep, we have them. Here's a $100 bill. I want you to put it on their bill, on their room. Don't tell them who did this. Just walk away. You're done. There's widows, there's people on Social Security. Even though they set aside whatever they can to get to the feast, it's just not enough. So don't let them slip through the cracks. The other thing is those that go to the feast, whether it's Linda or the single person, you know, that don't have a mate or a companion there, don't let them be the third wheel sitting off in the corner all by themselves. Help them have an enjoyable feast. Prayer. How do we encourage others in prayer? Stacy did here a couple weeks ago, months ago. Oh, look, what did I do? She told on Facebook, if you didn't see it, and I don't know if I'll get all the details right, but if I remember right, there was a Lego piece that got lost, and the kids were looking for it. And so Stacy told them, well, what if we sit down and we pray about it? The kids agreed. They all gathered around, and her kids prayed over how that they wanted help finding the missing Lego piece. And within a matter of moments, right, the Lego piece was right there in front of them. Their kids got to witness what the power of prayer is like. Right, Noah? You remember that? Yeah? And God helped you find it, didn't he? Yeah? A few years ago, my coworker, he's got a younger family. At the time, his boys were, I want to say, 2 and 3. And from time to time, he'll come back and he'll ask me about my beliefs and religion in general and things like that. So we'd had quite a few discussions. And one day, somehow we got talking about prayer. And as we went on, finally I said, "So do your boys know anything about prayer?" And he says, "Well, what do you mean?" I said, "Are you going to teach them? If you're telling me you understand that prayer is worthwhile, are you going to teach your boys to pray?" He says, never thought about it that way. A few months later, he comes up to me. He says, "I want to tell you something." I said, "What's that?" He says, "Me, my wife, and my boys, when it's bedtime, the last thing we do is we pray together as a family." He says, "Because you asked me about that." What? Anybody got any other thoughts on prayer? Gary?
I love this forum that we're going through. It's exciting to contribute. But having a prayer group over to your house, there's needs all the time. I mean, we never run out of people having ups and downs in their life that are very difficult. And having a prayer group to your house, you know, 3 or 4 people or less, and maybe just a cup of coffee or a soda to drink and pray for the needs in your neighborhood or in your close proximity or that you're familiar with. It's very important and very helpful, and you pray for each other as well. A prayer group, it hones in your mind on the needs of others, and it also gives you, oh, I can take them some food, and I know they need it, or I know they need some money, or they need a push, or they need a hand with something around the house. When you pray and share what's going on in your neighborhood, you find out the needs you can help with physically, and not just prayer.
Eileen, then Lori.
And also, you can pray while you're driving. Of course, watch what you're doing driving. But you can pray. You can pray in the shower, as you said you've done. And you can just pray anywhere. And always thanking God first for the things that you have already observed, and then asking your requests. You can do that all day long, every day, wherever you are, all by yourself.
Well, I'm going to interrupt Gloria just for a second, just because this came to mind. So I gave a message here a handful of years ago, and about a year ago I had opportunity to, I was sitting down with 2 or 3 other guys, and maybe without much wisdom, I asked them, "What's the best or worst message you've ever heard?" And one of them there wasn't even a split second in between my voice cutting off, and he jumped right in and he says, "Aaron, you gave the worst message I've ever heard." Okay, fair enough. "What do you mean?" He says, "Well," he says, "I don't know." He says, "I guess it could have been put together." He says, "But I need to share something with you. During your message, you talked about how you started praying and that it took you starting in the shower to be comfortable so you could just stay with God." He says, "My teenage son was in that audience and he heard that message and he started praying because of what you said that day." So, sorry.
I'm confused. Why didn't you, why wasn't why would we like that?
I can't give you the details. It was we've got a great relationship. I love him, and he did share with me some things. But at the moment, I can't think of how to share details without crossing some lines. Yeah. So.
I was going to say to be able to share examples of to others of answered prayers, and that people can see that prayer does work. You know, God will answer, you know, one way or another. And he doesn't always answer right away, but he will answer.
All right, we're running long on time, and I kind of want to keep moving, but I don't want to skip any of this. So if you really want to include something, please don't hesitate. Servitude/ministry. I don't know the best way, you know, to do this. I'll give you a couple examples. The leaders. God has given them a gift for mentoring others in relationship. And today, they're down in Southfield willing to share that ministry. And they've been an encouragement to our group in how often they've shared things with us, but we need to be an encouragement to them. When they're willing to go off and do things like this, we need to make sure that they feel encouraged, that they don't feel like they're neglecting us because they're not here again. We need to thank them for taking the opportunity to do just that, because I know Southfield has actually asked them to come down and give a multiple session seminar simply on marriage. And that means they're not here as often as maybe we would like them to be. But we need to encourage that kind of thing. The ladies spend a lot of time, as well as the Gonzalos, in setting up the feast site. For months and months, they are working out logistics so that the feast can be comfortable for people. It can be small things. When we use the word ministry, sometimes we think it's just that's a much bigger thing than what it needs to be. Simply showing up here and making sure that this atmosphere is comfortable. Do you help with setup, with the tear down? You know, we now live stream half of our broadcast, and today happens to be one, to people that for whatever reason can't be here or just simply want to tune in, you know, to another service. You know, there's little things like that we can do throughout our week, throughout our time here, that's encouraging for others. Studying God's Word. Lindsay Mason, Garrett Gonzalo, for a long time, daily, has sent out just simply a scripture on Facebook or through text or something like that. Linda, on a very regular basis, she sends out just an encouraging word. A lot of times they're phrases and things like that, you know, that are just uplifting and worshiping, you know, towards God. Rick Gentile, some of us know him. He's right now recovering from shoulder surgery, but he's a paraplegic. He doesn't have the use of his legs. And having shoulder surgery, he's, in a sense, bedridden until that shoulder is back to 100%, because that's how he transfers himself. That is his legs. And he was telling me the other day how he found out that in the care home that he's in, there was no Bible aids in their little library. So he bought a handful of them. And three or four of the other patients or people that are staying there notice them right away and start grabbing them and reading them. Well, now he's teaching people how to use Bible age, and he's having some really uplifting conversations with some of the other patients. You know, what a great way to do that. Last week, Dennis's message at the funeral. I don't know. Was that Dennis's first funeral that he's given? That was his first funeral that he's given. He did such a good job of just sharing God's truth and not compromising in any way, knowing that a lot of the audience have never heard this in any way. He wasn't long-winded. That really spoke to me, and I know it spoke to ours because they got comments afterwards. You know, that Dennis didn't compromise the message that needed to be given that day because the audience may or may not get it. No, we just speak the truth. That's it. God does the rest. Baptism. How high on the priority list should this be to encourage others? Is this a necessity or not? And how often do we talk about it? How often do we go up and encourage somebody to get baptized? Gary?
I don't want to make this go very long, but it represents our death with Christ and being resurrected as a new creature. And it really is a metaphor of our life in Christ. And it's metaphors are so important in our learning process that we need to remind people and remind ourselves and thank God so much that we died with Him so that we might become new with Him.
I've got down also, and I'm just going to quick breeze through these. I got down finances/stewardship. You know, God has given us everything. Are we good stewards of everything He has given us? The Burkharts are here. God blessed them with an amazing piece of land. And they have shared that land, not just with me, but with others. Our finances. God, there's nothing wrong. God blessed Abraham. He blessed Solomon with amazing wealth. There's nothing wrong with being well-to-do. Nothing wrong with it at all. But He also gives us so much guidance in what to do with that wealth. Do we get an education to do that with? Do we also, and I think maybe it was Gary mentioned earlier, you know, if we want to spend time with our families, maybe that does mean we need to take a pay cut. But is that not something we can do, no matter what we're making today? Can we do it with a little bit less? Yeah, we probably could. We're the richest nation in the world right now, still. Faith. Do we share our faith? Our testimonies. You know, I'm sharing some, you are sharing some right now. And again, every time that happens, somebody gets touched by it. We can't hold back on that. Don't be afraid to share the examples. Fellowship. Face to face. Make a phone call. Send a card. How often do you face to face fellowship? And I'm even talking about here. When you come here, do you work the room? Do you go up and say hi to everybody? How are you doing? What's going on, you know, in your life? Is there anything I can pray about? Or do you tend to hang out in your own corner hoping that they'll come your direction? The last one I got is hospitality. And that can go along with stewardship. Do you open up your home? What about your car? Someone needs a car. Do you open that? And we've got some amazing testimonies here as far as these areas, right? We just need to encourage each other. A lot of times we go through life, or a week, or a year, where it takes us down, or just a setting, maybe it's an atmosphere, and we go, something's not right and it's bothering me. It's getting under my skin. I'm agitated. I'm irritable. And it's starting to make me angry. What's really going on? You're allowing Satan in. Because that's not God. He doesn't evoke those emotions in us. If we feel like something is going wrong in an area, we need to stop complaining about it. We need to go to God and ask Him, what will you have me do? This area, something is not right. I'm unsettled in it. What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to do it? When am I supposed to do it? Whom am I supposed to do it with? And when God asks one of us to make a change, we encourage that also. Because it may mean that God asked them to move away from us for whatever reason. And if God's doing that, that means He's got something better. He wants to utilize their gifts and talents in another area. We should be encouraging in that realm too. I sat for 45 years in the bleachers cheering others on. The race isn't about watching or waiting for somebody else to win. It's about making sure that all of us cross the finish line. That's all I had.
Yeah, I got a short one.
So, unless there's a comment, why?
I got a short
one. Oh, yeah, go ahead, Glenn.
And I'll try to be as brief with this as possible. I wanted to share during your tithing portion, but I think about halfway through that portion, I realized, no, I should probably save this to the end, because while it could be applied mostly to tithing, I think it really does apply to all of it. You know, a good friend of mine over at another congregation, actually where I went to school, a good friend of mine there gave a sermon on tithing a while back. And one of the big points he brought up was, in relation to tithing, but you know, tithing isn't just money, it's with everything. And one of the big points he brought up was Hebrew tradition back in the days of the Bible and with Abraham and Moses. Their tradition was when you invite someone over for a meal or for fellowship, during the course of the meal, you would continue to fill their cup up. And if you wanted them to stay, you would continue to fill their cup up. And it was considered rude to leave if you left having a full cup. But you would continue to fill their cup up, and if you wanted to be able to leave, you had to finish the glass and tip it over, set it upside down so that they know, okay, you'd like to leave. Along with that, though, he said that God says many times over that the things that He blesses us with, if we are faithful to use them, to be able to pour them out over others and not just hold them to ourselves, but do good with them, do work with them, He will continue to bless us more and more and more until it gets to the point where our cup is not only filled with food, with water, with whatever it may be that He's blessed us with, but it's shaken up, pressed down, and still overflowing to the point where if you tried to put any more in it, the vessel would break. Now with that, it's not just money, it's not food, it's not our time, it's all of it. And we have to be willing to give back what we're given, whether it's giving the first fruits of our time that we have, getting up and spending time in prayer with Him in the morning, whether it's the first fruit of our money, being able to give Him the first 10% so that He can do more with the rest of it than what we started out with. Or whether it's giving Him the first fruits of our garden, giving it to the church, and then realizing that, oh, we thought we were going to have a shortage, but now we have so much more than we even know what to do with throughout our crops, so that now we can't even harvest it all, and now the animals around are getting to eat some because we can't take it all. Point being that if we continue to use the gifts that He gives us, continue to just trust Him that even when it looks like there is no possible way that we can do anything close to what we're being asked to with what we're given, if we can continue to trust Him anyways and to follow through with it, God's not going to let you fall short. It's not to say it's going to be comfortable. It's not going to say it's going to be easy, but He's not going to let you fall short. He's going to continue to bless you and do far more than you ever thought possible with it. And, take a look at a cup of water. If you continue to pour water into it, you have flowing water. Now, flowing water is good. There's life found in it. There's streams filled with wildlife, filled with fish, with frogs, with minnows, with everything in it. And that water goes places. It provides nutrients to all the trees and all the things on the side of it. It provides drinking water for all the animals downstream. For everywhere it goes, it provides life. But now look at stagnant water. If you have a cup of sitting water or a bowl of sitting water or just a water that is not moving at all, or even food that is not moving at all, if you let something sit, it becomes stagnant, gets filled with bacteria, filled with things that can poison you, things that can kill you. It becomes bad for you. Even something that is good as food, that is something as living water, if you let it sit, if you do nothing with it, it will kill you. And not only you, it will affect those around you. You know, look at our congregation today. Look all around you, not just the people sitting around you, but look around your homes, look around your communities. Everywhere around you, there's something you can be doing. Heather and Miles, they've got another one on the way. Now, I don't know what all they need, but I'm sure pretty soon it's going to be nice if they can take a break for a little bit, not have to cook a home-cooked meal, not have to worry about dinner, and just have someone bring them something. Linda, she's got a lot of things around that are just flowing through her mind. She loves to be able to worship, and money is a big thing for her. It takes her down. It depresses her at times because she doesn't feel she has enough to be able to do what she wants with it. She doesn't feel she has enough to be able to go to the feast. And it's not to say that, you know, everybody is needing something specific, that everybody needs the same thing. It's not to say that Linda is struggling so much with money that, you know, she can't do anything. Linda does a lot with her money, and she is faithful. We've seen that. But there's needs all around this room. Bill Britton, you know, after Ed's death, now he's left to help with little Ethan. Ethan's got autism. It's been a while since Bill has done anything with parenting. Not to say that he's bad at parenting, not to say that he can't do any of it, but I'm sure he needs help. Even with helping out with Tina, I'm sure that there's times where he needs help. He doesn't really know what to do or just needs some comfort to know that it's not a nuisance to have him around. We want him around. We want to be able to help out. There's needs all around the room. And we need to be able to give back to what God has given us. Not simply for our own growth, but for the growth of the community. There's all things that we can be doing, and there's all things that we need. And it all starts with being willing to stand up, say, okay, this is yours, God, to what we've been given. And when he calls, being willing to say, here am I, send me.